Welcome back to the Puckin' Pod. On today's episode, we discuss the Four Nations Cup with rosters and what to expect. Then it's another Shocked and Appalled. And finally, it's the second part of our Marvel Cinematic Universe discussion. That's all coming up next right here on the Puckin' Pod. Let's puckin' go! We are back with another episode of the Puckin' Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Well, gentlemen, we've got a lot to talk about. I say we start with the Four Nations Cup. This is something we've been waiting a long time for. I mean, they announced it, what, 2 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
And now we're ready to go. We've got four teams who are kind of vying for best in the world. I'm sure there are other teams who are probably like, we kind of belong in that question, in that category too, but they're not in that category. So we've got Canada, USA, Sweden, and Finland. Can you tell me a little bit about some notable players on each of those teams?
Well, the Four Nations Cup is being hosted in both Montreal and Boston during the NHL season here. And we are looking at, like, so Team Canada. Some notables that made the team are Nathan MacKinnon, Mitch Marner, Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Cale Makar, Josh Morrissey, Alex Pietrangelo. These are all guys that kind of regularly are considered for the Olympic teams. And I'd say if you're looking at Canada, the goaltending's probably our weakest spot.
Yeah, I would agree.
We have Jordan Binnington, Aiden Hill, and Sam Montembeau as our projected goaltenders for that tournament.
I think the goaltending has been subpar from our country for a long time now.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to if anybody has like a suggestion or an idea as to why, because I literally don't. I have no idea. And you've seen over the years kind of the goalies that seem to develop the best as Canadians are French Canadian goalies.
Yeah.
And like the standout players, even a player, for example, that's still playing like Marc-Andre Fleury, and he's dominated for so long that like these players and these goaltenders, like what's happening with Canada? Because we'll talk about it in a minute, but like the US goalies, like the top three goalies that are playing for the US are like in top five in the NHL.
NHL, yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, and it's just, I don't have an idea. Do you guys, any theories, any craziness, any curse ideas? What do you got?
Referencing an earlier show, we talked about curses. I agree. I think, I you know, it's definitely baffling to me to see the way that the sort of skill level drops off when it comes to Canadian goaltending. I agree. I think a lot of them do come from kind of French Canada. When you consider Roberto Luongo grew up in Montreal. And Carey Price was a BC boy, but you know, even BC, we do have a few good goalie camps here in BC. So I'm not sure necessarily if it's a combination of like the goalie's skill has dropped off, or if those players are moving elsewhere to play. Right. And also not just them, but also the coaching as well. You know, the coaches are moving to Europe to coach. So they're coaching European players to play better. They're moving to the States and coaching, you know, American players to play better, not just goaltenders, but players in general. So that's something I heard on a report by Craig Button had said, you know, after the World Juniors, where they were like, well, why is Canada suffering so much? And he was specifying, you know, it's because the coaches are moving away. And so these people who should be in their own country coaching their own players, they're getting paid to coach in other places. And that's why.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't realize that article, or he had done an interview, because that is a good theory. I like that.
Yeah.
That's something to think about for sure.
When, you know, I'd look at our goaltending situation for Canada this year, and, you know, we're looking at the fact that there might have even been some snubs, like a guy like Logan Thompson's having an amazing year and not even considered for
incredible year.
He'd be their starting goaltender.
Yeah, and he's been a good goaltender for a few years. I mean, you know, winning with Vegas, you know, before he got traded was probably the cherry on top for him, and he still got snubbed. It's baffling.
It's incredibly baffling. I would definitely have considered him on there over, say, Sam Montembeau. Montreal's played good, but I would say Thompson's got more skill maybe than Montembeau. Montembeau's still pretty young.
Yeah.
So out of the three, Bennington, Hill, and Montembeau, who do you guys have as a pick as the kind of the runaway number one, or do you think maybe they'll tandem it?
I'm guessing Hill will be number one.
Yeah.
That's my thought process.
Yeah.
A different look, too, because he's a right-handed catching goalie.
Yeah, I just have a hard time believing that Bennington is there anymore. So it was baffling to me that he even got chosen to play for Canada, considering he's such a
polarizing,
emotional player. He's so emotional.
Yeah.
And a tournament aspect, I just can't see a situation that he ends up being the guy.
I'd be worried about that emotional side of his game in a tournament where with international officiating, the rules are different.
100%.
You're going to get the book thrown at you if you freak out, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, and, you know, I've noticed in previous World Series and in the Olympics, sometimes they'll start with the goaltender and they're noticing that it's not fitting and they'll switch, like that happened with Curtis Joseph switching to Martin Brodeur in the Olympics.
It also happened with Martin Brodeur switching to Roberto Luongo in 2010.
It did. So I wouldn't be surprised maybe if they actually did start with Jordan Bennington just because of the tenure that he's
experience,
had.
Experience, yeah.
And then if he's not working it, then maybe switch to Aiden Hill.
I just don't think it's the right choice. I really don't. Neither. I don't think that Bennington is the same goaltender he was when he won the Cup with St. Louis.
Yeah.
And even then, I'm not sure he was the guy then, to be honest. I don't have a lot of faith in him being the emotional player that he is. I don't think he's as good as they say he is. I think he's got good defense in front of him when he does play well. But that's just me. I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not a goaltending coach or guru or whatever, but it's just what I see, you know?
Looking at the Canadian roster, quite a few surprises and snubs with the team.
Yeah, and I wonder if, you know, early selection had something to do with it. And I know that rosters, I think, had to be finalized early December sometime. But you've got some players that have been absolutely lighting it up. One in particular, since the roster was selected, and that's an example would be Mark Scheifele. But I can think of a couple of players like John Tavares is having an excellent season. Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
You know, over guys like we've got forwards with Sam Bennett, who is named to the team and he hasn't scored in like 12 games.
Yeah.
Anthony Cirelli. Yeah, I know why he's there. A couple of reasons. Well, John Cooper was the selector.
Yeah.
So he knows a little bit about him.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a great defensive center, right? He's a great forward. He plays hard. He wins draws. He's there for kind of that character side of the game, I would say. But I mean, John Tavares can do that too.
I feel like, you know, this was the one chance they could have had McDavid, Crosby, and Bedard on a line.
Yeah.
That would have been incredible.
I heard that line could possibly be McDavid, Crosby, and Marchand. And Marchand came out the other day and said he was absolutely stoked for it. And
I'm sure he would be. I would be too. But I'm just saying, like, when you think of, like, generational talent on the same line, that would have been incredible.
That would have been incredible.
Yeah. And I think they've robbed Canada of that.
Well, and if you're looking at... This isn't the generational talent side of it, but if you're looking at chemistry and like wingmen, like obviously Crosby and McKinnon, based upon just their history together, are going to have chemistry. But, you know, get a mission that is kind of surprising because he had over 50 goals last year with Zach Hyman.
Yeah.
He's got great chemistry with McDavid and didn't make the cut.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to say anything too negative about the Oilers, but I love Zach Hyman as a player. Don't get me wrong. I don't see him other than, and it's the same thing with Draisaitl. I just don't see them being as successful. I don't see them being as successful if they're not in the spot that they're always in. So with Hyman, it's like he's a net front guy. Would he be the same caliber of guy on a roster playing against the best players on the other side? I'm not trying to sort of belittle him, but I just feel like, you know, I just don't see it.
I understand your position on that.
And again, I'm not trying to be too biased, But it's just, I feel like, you know, it's the same thing when I think of like Ovechkin. Okay, the guy scores from the same position every time.
Every time.
Well, you know, it's shame on the other team for letting him sit there all by himself and score that same goal. And it's the same with Draisaitl. The Draisaitl scores from the goal line every single game. You know, he sits on that faceoff dot like and just waits for the puck to come his way, and people don't cover him. So what are you going to do? And then Hyman's the same thing. He's just always net front. They don't box him out properly.
Just real quick, Paul, I know you have a point. I hope I don't take it. But what I would say about Hyman that you may not realize, and coming from watching him as a Leafs fan,
yeah.
The things he does away from the puck is crucial to his success.
100%.
And he is one of the league leaders in takeaways every single year. Puck battles won.
That's important.
Like along the boards, his play is incredible.
And, I mean, there's not enough players like that. I mean, that's what Mark Stone is known for, right?
Yeah,
same right. thing.
And, you know, to give credence here, because you're talking about Hyman playing against the best players in the world, he is on the top line in Edmonton, and so he's usually playing against the top talent on each and every team. So I can give credence to the fact that, yeah, maybe he's not considered the superstar, you know, in the league, but he does have to play against the hardest player, the best players on the other teams.
So he didn't get picked for Canada.
Yeah.
Who is the Hyman of Team Canada?
Brandon Hagel?
I'd say Anthony Cirelli, probably. Yeah, yeah.
Although he's playing center, right? Hyman's a winger? Or is he a centerman?
Hyman's a winger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say you've got a couple of pretty solid character guys that are going to play for Canada, though. You know, a couple that stand out for me are Travis Konecny, who I am a huge fan of, even though he's a pain in the ass every time you play. That's why you like him.
Yeah.
Really. And, you know, Seth Jarvis, too, just an incredible player.
Yeah.
Young player. Yeah. I like that those players are on the team. I don't like some of the players that were left off. But, I mean, it is what it is, right?
I have to wonder if, you know, they're going to do the whole Mark Stone treatment where he's injured the entire tournament. plays in the playoffs and has somebody replace him until
he comes back. John Cooper is the coach. He's used to it on the Lightning side of things. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about the defense on Canada, because, you know, that is an important factor when you're talking about playing against the best in the world. Cale Makar, probably the best defenseman on the team when you think of offensive talent. Plus, he's got wheels. The guy can move, and he can move the puck. So... But who are you pairing him up with? Are you pairing him up with somebody like Pietrangelo? Or
he's going with Taves. That's the whole reason that Devin Taves made
the team. Devin Taves, yeah. Didn't even realize Devin Taves was on the team, too.
It'd be the same with Shea Theodore and Alex Pietrangelo.
So that being said, I mean, look at all these other names on there. Cale Makar is probably not even going to be on the top line, do you think? Top D pairing?
I think he's top pairing. McKinnon's going to be on the top line, I'm pretty sure.
Well, then Pietrangelo and Parayko are definitely going to be on the same line. They played together in St. Louis.
See, and I think Petey would play with
Shea Theodore. Yeah,
yeah, because they play together.
Yeah, jeez.
So I mean, really, the wild card here, who could be the arguably the best defenseman there, is Josh Morrissey.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
Is he going to play with Parayko? Is he going to play with Sanheim? Parayko and Sanheim are both huge.
Good point.
They're a little on the slower side.
They are going to have a seventh defenseman, obviously.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, one guy's obviously not going to play every game, but does that mean Josh Morrissey's your third pair, or your seventh player? Like, I mean,
maybe Sanheim.
It's interesting because I would say there are other teams that have a stronger defensive core,
yes,
but this still is a pretty damn good lineup of players.
Yeah, I will be very interested to see the USA defensive lineup compared to the Canadian one.
They're smaller in stature. They don't have the size.
But skill. I mean, Quinn Hughes is going to be on that team. Paired up with who?
Adam Fox, probably.
My Wi-Fi is just not working right now. Bear with me here. Yeah, probably
Adam Fox. I would think he would play with Adam Fox, probably. Yeah. Maybe Charlie McAvoy.
If the Drew Doughty injury doesn't happen this year, do you think either Sanheim or Parayko make the team at this point?
No. Sanheim would be the one out, probably.
Probably.
Yeah, Quinn Hughes, Adam Fox, Charlie McAvoy, Jacob Slavin.
Noah Hannifin, Brock Faber.
Yeah.
Zach Werenski.
I think this is a decent defensive lineup for USA.
Very good.
I mean, the goaltending alone is going to be what makes the difference, but So let's talk a little bit about the U.S. forwards. What are we looking at here?
Scary?
Yeah, stacked is maybe the best way to put it. You've got Kyle Connor, who's been lights out this year. You've got Jack Eichel making that team. You've got Jack Hughes. You've got Dylan Larkin, leading goal scorer from the league last year. Austin Matthews, JT Miller, both Kachucks who are going to pretty much kill anyone that they're playing against.
What line are they? They're going to be on a line together.
I'm thinking them with JT Miller. Like
JT Miller.
Because he's such a physical centerman. Oh. I can totally see that being their like hitting line.
Yeah. Brutal. I quit.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I mean, who's Matthew's going to play with? He'll probably play with Jack Hughes, right?
And probably Kyle Connor, I think.
Yeah.
That'll be a dangerous line.
That'll be their top line, I would think. Yeah.
I could see a fourth line of probably like Chris Kreider, Vincent Trocheck, and Brock Nelson.
Yeah.
Keeping it all in New York kind of thing.
Yeah. Nelson's kind of tailed off, though. Like, they'll have the depth at forward. I'm not so sure he's going to get as much ice time as you think.
No, probably not.
Because Matt Boldy was named, and Minnesota's playing unreal. Boldy's having a good year. And I mean, you can't get away from Trocheck and his face-off ability. So I don't know.
Tough one.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, Dylan Larkin, too. Like, he's going to be probably, if you're looking at this on paper, like, Dylan Larkin's probably on the outside looking in, really.
I don't have it in front of me, so can you tell me who's left that we haven't discussed? Dylan Larkin?
Jake Guentzel.
Okay, I can see them playing together. Jake Guentzel is a big playmaker, so I can totally see him playing with somebody like Larkin, because Larkin having the speed he has, I can see a bunch of stretch passes happening with those guys.
Yeah.
I could see Matt Boldy probably playing with them, too.
Yeah.
He's a bull when it comes to...
Boldy reminds me a lot of kind of Brock Besser, like where they just bring it to the net, you know? Yeah. Like, I can see that.
I wonder if they don't put JT Miller... with the Kachucks, it's got to be Jack Eichel in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, Miller can play really on any line.
Yeah.
But I, the reason why I thought that is just for the physicality of it. Like, they would be a physical line for sure.
He could play wing, too.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Right? Yep, yeah, absolutely. When he came to Vancouver, that was what he was known for, playing wing. He wasn't a centerman. Vancouver kind of made him a centerman, and ironically, he's one of their best centermen. So.
And, I mean, there's two players that I can think of that are not even on the roster. We're left off the roster. That you kind of go, it's amazing that they were left off, and they'd fit in nicely, too. The first one would be, to those Habs fans out there, Cole Caulfield.
Yeah.
Like, sparky little player, but man, the guy can rip him, and he's doing well right now. And then on the opposite side of the scale, you've got Tage Thompson.
Yeah, Tage Thompson is probably one of their better...
Powerful skater.
Yeah.
Huge.
And just, great hands.
Yeah.
And, yeah. No.
Especially down low.
Caulfield's very... I mean, what's funny about Caulfield is he's kind of turned it on since being snubbed, right? Like, he's scoring a lot, and the guy has, like... He can score anywhere.
It's kind of like Scheifele that way for Canada. He's really turned it on since they said no.
Probably
maybe he should play for Canada instead.
Probably say the same about Jason Robertson. Guy can pretty much score from anywhere either and got snubbed.
Yeah.
Clay Keller was a high pick in his draft, and he is... maybe next to Dylan Gunther right now, is kind of the face of the Utah Hockey Club.
You know who Keller reminds me of when he plays? Is like Nathan MacKinnon light. Like they're not as fast, not quite as skilled.
Yeah.
They're the exact same player, though.
Totally.
You watch the way they play and the creativity and just the dominance with the puck.
MacKinnon's one of my favorite players. Like,
yeah.
When I think of like my favorite players in the league, he's definitely up there. Him and Crosby, I would love to see them on a team together. And I would also hate it because it wouldn't be Vancouver. But.
I'm not going to lie to you. I am so intrigued to see how the lineups shape up specifically for the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously with Swinland and...
Swinland.
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 Feeling.
Yeah, I come from Swinland.
It's Switzerland.
I'm Swedish. Obviously, with the talent on the Sweden and Finland teams too, but specifically U.S. and Canada, I just think they're gonna be crazy to watch, and I'm really excited to see what's gonna happen with the lineup specifically and how they line up against each other.
What are we looking at when it comes to say Sweden? Like, who's notable on that team?
Obviously, we're looking at Maple Leafs fans are happy to see William Nylander make the team, but same with Canucks fans with Elias Pettersson making the team.
Yeah.
You're looking at still relevant, even though they did haven't had a great year. Mika Zibanejad from the Rangers. Surprise, Elias Lindholm with the year that he's having, made the team. Philip Forsberg, of course, is
not just year. Like, Lindholm has had a bad couple of years.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's interesting to. I mean, what you're limited to what you have, and I think a lot of times you do still want that veteran presence on your team.
Yeah.
So he's definitely there, but just he's definitely in terms of like points, he doesn't belong.
They got a couple of really good young guys on the team, Leo Carlson and Lucas Raymond too.
Good choices.
Lucas Raymond's going to be a star league, and this is going to be fun for him if he gets to play every game. Like if he really makes the roster, I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
And you know, I'll say this just about the sort of cut you off there, Paul. But I'll say this about this roster. You know, for those players that are slumping, it's gonna be interesting to see how the tournament affects their play going forward, like for the rest of the year, because you know I think of somebody like Pettersson, who he's just started to score again before he got injured, you know, a couple of games ago. A while back, and it just feels like this is going to help him kind of improve the rest of his game, or you know, his game for the rest of the year.
Another player on Sweden that I never think of as a Swede. I really don't. And having an unreal year, he's on pace for like 90 points. And that's Jesper Bratt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From New Jersey. I mean, New Jersey's having a killer year too, but I never think of that player as being from Sweden, right? And last year he had 83 points or something last year, 73 the year before that. And I mean, on pace for, you know, nearly 100 this year, and he's only 26. So
that's pretty impressive,
impressive player for sure.
If you're looking at, I think one of the things that's going to help Sweden like rival the other kind of teams is their defense. Their defense is quite stacked.
That's important.
You've got Rasmus Dahlin, former first overall pick, Erik Karlsson, who's a Norris Trophy winner not that long ago, Victor Hedman.
His resume is too long to list.
Gustav Forsling, a recent Stanley Cup winner. Rasmus Andersson, who again I think for years was underrated in Calgary.
Good player.
But so good, especially with being a right-handed shot. I think, you know, if we're looking at the Swedish defense, what would you think the pairings would be?
It's tough because I'm looking at this and I see three right defense players and four left defense players.
Yeah.
Obviously, you only have three lines when it comes to defense, but you know, who the question it really should be, who do they have as their seventh defenseman? I have my guesses. I'm guessing that we're looking at Brodin as probably their extra seventh defenseman.
I would think so.
You're probably looking at somebody like Carlson and Hedman playing together.
That's what I would have thought.
And then maybe Ekholm and Forsling.
Yep.
And then the two Rasmuses playing on the third pair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how I'd have it line up.
Yeah.
That's how I would do it too.
It's interesting because I'm also looking at these forward pairings, and I'm looking at somebody like, you know, Elias Pettersson, possibly playing with somebody like Jesper Bratt and like Kempe. You know, that's kind of an interesting pairing. Lucas Raymond playing with William Karlsson and Gustav Nyquist. Nyquist known for his speed, but he's actually really good in terms of playmaking ability too. But that first pair on the, you know, for the forwards, Philip Forsberg, Mika Zibanejad, and William Nylander. That's what I'm seeing together.
That's going to be a lazy line.
I'm thinking the same thing. But then you've got people like Hedman and Karlsson kind of helping out in the back there, right? So it'll be interesting to see what they do. And I think we will see some offense from this Sweden team, but it may come down to, you know, the second line down.
What about a player that was left off the team? And this player is having another stellar year, on pace for almost 75 points on a bad team, though. Like, do you think maybe that plays into effect? Like, I have two players that I want to mention. The first player is Rickard Rakell.
Yeah.
And he's on a team in Pittsburgh that's not doing well, although I think they're starting to turn it on. You just never know. They could make a serious turnaround and make a push, right? They have the talent. And another player is from San Jose. And he's young. He's 22, and that's William Eklund.
Yeah.
I think he's got 15 goals or something on the way he's... Yeah, fuck. God damn it. Thought I could get away with bullshit my way through that. He's on pace for like 35 goals this year as a 22-year-old.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, there, as much as we look at this forward lineup and we go, well, these are some well-established NHL players, there's a couple of young guys peeking there. I mean, Ricard Raquel's not as young, but kind of underrated, maybe.
Yeah, I think that what they're doing is they're relying heavily on that experience, especially with the top line. And, you know, you do have Leo Carlson playing for the team. In fact, the way I see it, he's going to be paired up with another Carlson, William Carlson, and Lucas Raymond. So that'll be a pretty fast line. I'm excited for that.
A surprising stump to me would be Hampus Lindholm. Like, it's one of those things where you could have the eight defenders and one less forward.
Yeah.
And that would still be a very powerful team.
Agreed. Yeah. But what about goaltending for the Swedish team?
Well, you've got former Calgary Flames starter,
Jacob Markstrom. And Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, that's correct.
And Florida Panther.
Yeah. Drafted by the Panthers. Traded for Luongo.
Jacob Markstrom. And that's a good choice. He's having a good year this year.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Linus Allmark, who was the was the starter kind of in Boston.
Like 1B, I would say.
1B. Right.
Can he stay healthy, though?
That's the question.
That is the question.
Because right now he's not healthy. Like, he's not playing right now. Because before the tournament, he wasn't healthy. You know, so
he's been kind of on and off
to
start this year. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've got resurgent Philip Gustafson. He had kind of that one down year, but he had a resurgence last year. And young guy, if any one of either Allmark or Markstrom go down, he's definitely going to be a good, capable backup.
Yeah. All right, boys. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Finland roster, because they are number four. Which, of course, finalizes all of our teams playing in this tournament. Who do we have playing on the Finland roster?
So we've got notable Sebastian Aho, who has become a superstar in Carolina. Alex Barkov, who just obviously... Or Sasha Barkov, I should say. He's more known for that.
I'm so confused by that. Does anybody have a theory or
is
understanding?
Is he the same person?
Yes.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yes. It's like his name is Alexander, but they call him Sasha.
So it's like a nickname or something.
Yeah, basically.
Weird.
Obviously, just recently won the Stanley Cup of Florida. Mikko Rantanen, Stanley Cup winner. Patrick Laine, who's been having resurgence since coming back to Montreal. And then you got Rube Hintz, who's a big, big star in Dallas.
Yeah.
And Michael Granlund's also been resurgent with the San Jose Sharks. And then maybe a little bit less notables, but they'll probably bring some character to the team. Would definitely be Joel Armia, Arturi Lekkonen, Itu Lauttarinen, and Tuukka Teravainen. Surprising admission to the team to me, actually, is Kaapo Kakko.
I was just going to say Kaapo Kakko. The guy has had such a down year this year. It's hard to think that he's going to make an impact. He might be an extra player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what about the best player on that team and Mikko Rantanen?
Yeah.
I'm going to argue the best player on that team is Kevin Lankinen, but that's just me. Yeah. No, I mean, there's some good goaltending there. You've got UC Saros, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and Kevin Lankinen, like three really good goalies. Like, Kevin Lankinen's having a great year goaltending-wise.
Yeah, I would agree.
And Saros is probably going to be the number one goalie.
If you're looking at the defense, Finland's only got six defensemen, even though they've got seven noted here. and the reason I mention that, who knows if Jani Hakanpää is going to come back to play this season?
That's true.
He's played three games.
Yeah.
So who knows with Jani Hakanpää, his health for this tournament. It very well could be just six defensemen.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, you do have some decent defensemen on the team. I mean, Rasmus Ristolainen, Olli Maatas. I mean, he's played a long time. He's not one of the better defensemen in the league, but he is a really good puck-moving defenseman, and I think he plays well defensively as well.
Miro Heiskanen's the best defenseman on that team.
I think the Dallas pairing that they're going to have on the team Lindell is going to be very underrated.
That's right.
Pairing for the tournament.
You know, it's interesting when you look at these players on all these teams and you think, like, these are decent teams. It's going to be really interesting watching how the tournament unfolds and kind of figure out what, you know, the way it's going to finish. Because, like, right now on paper, we can say probably the U.S. team is the best team. So, you know, we talk about how these teams look on paper, and I mean, ultimately we can say whatever, like USA is the best looking team on paper. But we just never know how things play out, you know, during that tournament. So it'll be really interesting to kind of see the way it finishes and the way the teams kind of stack up in the end. It's kind of fun. Like, you know, we look at this and it's a great break for the NHL. For the players that aren't in the tournament, they're going to get a 2-week break and they're going to get a chance to chill out and watch the tournament as well and cheer on their buddies and whatnot. But do you think this is something that helps the players that aren't playing in this league or that aren't playing in this tournament? Do you think it's something that helps them getting that break?
No, because they're going to put on 15 pounds.
Right.
Going to Hawaii, going to...
You're not wrong. You know, I mean, how Mexico, many of these whatever. Players are going to keep working out during this tour?
They'll have to.
They will.
But there'll be some time probably where...
We'll probably,
they're doing a little bit more extra. These are young guys.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably see kind of a slow start to the game when it comes back again after the tournament. Yeah.
You know, I look at us guys, and I'm on the back half of 30. You yeah. guys are, you know... on the real back half of 30.
We're in our 40s.
You know, I don't think to myself when I go on vacation, hey, I'm going to get drunk every night. Yeah. And, you know, it's spring break.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, hey, man, I like the odd beer or two, but at the same time, these guys have to be in a specific shape, right?
Not even just shape, but also mindset, too.
Mindset, yeah.
You know, like you've got to come back to the game and really think, like, we've got to get our crap together so that we're ready to, you know, go for the Stanley Cup. And I feel bad for these players having to do this tournament because they're going to come right back into that heavy competition. I would not be surprised if we see some injuries coming back.
I'm worried about that significantly.
Yeah. It's a disruption, right? Like the Olympics technically have been a disruption in the past too when the That's NHL right. players have
It's one of the reasons why the NHL didn't want to partake in it, right?
It's true. I think those are very valid concerns. And, you know, I think it'll still be fun to watch. I know the NBA midseason tournament has been fun to watch for the fans, but I think it's lost a bit of relevance this year compared to the previous year. So we'll see how the Four Nations does in terms of excitement.
Absolutely. Hey, Paul, sometimes you like to tell us about things that you're, I don't know, shocked and appalled about. Why don't you give us another rendition of Shocked and Appalled for this episode?
All right, guys. Well... there's always lots that's shocking and appalling. I think one of the things that stands out for the kind of the NHL season that's been shocking and appalling, obviously, before the season even started, we had obviously the tragic loss of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau. The situation going on with, I don't want to say the culprit, but I don't even want to call him a criminal, but the person involved with their tragic losses, you know, his trial has obviously been going here at this point. The fact that he rejected a plea deal before all of this started, it's concerning. It's for the fact that, you know, like if he had taken the plea deal, maybe his time would be reduced in jail. And unfortunately, this is a chargeable offense. What he did,
100%.
He killed two people.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to take it because he wants to stand up for himself.
I think what it comes down to is he wants to maybe not stand up for himself, but he wants to try and fight for, you know, he wants to try and fight for something different than what's being offered, I think.
What is there to fight for, bro?
Like, I know.
This guy blew 0.87 and he failed a field sobriety test when the police arrived. Yeah.
It's quite
what is there a debate about?
Yeah.
It's quite appalling, right? Like, and that's, you know, so we have a segment like this.
I would argue it's a bit more shocking. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
It's a shock. It's a shock that obviously what happened, but Agreed. It's appalling the fact that he wants to
I feel more bad for the Gaudreau family having to go through this.
Yeah.
And having to witness the guy like trying to fight for his freedom. It's like, I'm sorry, man. You've done your part, and now like the family has to suffer watching him go through this.
You know, it's the importance of not drinking and driving, right? You're possibly putting someone else's life in your hands, and if that life is lost, then you're paying it with your life.
That's right.
It's a death machine, man. Alcohol aside, just be wary of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think part of it came down to, he had talked about at one point saying, that he got tired of being behind someone who was driving slower, so he pulled out on the right to pass.
That's right.
Well, you're not allowed to do that, for one. So maybe you should pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then now two lives are lost and families are ruined.
Even if you're not drunk, like, you know your surroundings. Like, people do that kind of stuff when, even when they're not drunk, and it can affect the lives of people around him, not just your own, right?
It's a tragedy in every shape and form, both for the losses that happened and everyone that's involved, unfortunately, whether it's the families or even, like I said, the person that's caused this to happen in the first place.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know, can't say enough. My heart still goes out to both their families, and you know, it's brought up in this segment because we're constantly thinking of them.
That's right. What else you got?
So another thing that I find kind of shocking and appalling is you know, when I'm looking at the Blue Jays here, their front office is, I can't get behind them as a fan. You know, obviously they're making some signings this offseason, but all the big names that they try to go after, whether it's Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto, Corbin Burns, Teoscar Hernandez, you know, these are all big players that, you know, they're finalists for it, you know, quotations with my fingers here.
Yeah.
But can't seem to reel it in. And, you know, it's been like the last two seasons of this. And then if we're looking kind of even prior to, you know, kind of these off seasons, there just seems to be no consistency with this team. Like, they get into the wild card spots for these playoffs and they don't do anything. And it just seems that there's a lot of focus on, you know, we're looking at Mark Shapiro and Paul Beeston, Ross Atkins, all the heads of the team, all this glitz and glam about, you know, let's make us great again, kind of like the Trump of, I guess, baseball.
The MAGA of baseball.
But no substance, right? Yeah. And it's getting to a point, I think, with Jays fans and analysts and pundits that this is it. Like, really, it was technically it, I think, this last year, but this is it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it felt like it maybe last year, even the year before that, it felt like kind of... But after not getting Shohei, like, that seemed to be the big, kind of the big thing, right?
And one, you know, obviously the down season that they had last year because they didn't get Shohei. Like, this is it. Like, if Rodgers doesn't fire this front office, if they have another bad season this season, you're going to see fans leave in droves. There's already posts galore about it at this point.
Less season ticket holders and things like that. Because that's where it counts the most, in their wallets, right?
They can already see a decline in that last season. I think they had stated halfway through the year last year that they were like 50 to 60% less total attendance.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think it got better as the year went on for whatever reason. I don't understand why. But the beginning half of the year, and they had just put a crap ton of money into renovating that place too.
Yeah,
you know?
It brings you back to, you know, who they had before. I would love to have Anthopoulos have been running this team. It is really too bad that they lost him, because there was obviously that disagreement between him and Shapiro.
Yeah,
it's really too bad because I don't think that this team is going to lose relevance if they don't succeed this year.
Yeah,
I do have a couple more shocking, appalling things that are happening. It's been so frustrating since all this came out. Obviously, the United States have a new president.
They do.
And it's been so...
I wouldn't say he's a new president, but anyway.
Well, he got inaugurated last month. Looking at Trump's remarks about Canada becoming the 51st state has been extremely annoying and appalling.
It's gotten to the point where it's almost like it's not a joke for him.
I read somewhere, whether you believe it or not, but I read somewhere that all this talk about Greenland and Canada and all that stuff, like the, you know, taking over the places and stuff, it's sort of a distraction because it's a distraction from the whole, like, what's happening financially with the United States, with the tariffs and all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
he's threatening. What's happening is he's distracting people with this discussion while he's raising prices on tariffs so Americans are paying more for different things, right? And so the cost of living is starting to go up. And so it's kind of a distraction for all that, right? Like, oh, if only we took over Canada, then a cost of living would start going down and we wouldn't have to pay tariffs and blah, 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 right? Like, it's just sort of a narrative that he's creating himself, right? But again, that's more like what's being discussed.
Well, and Canada's in a precarious position because we just had our parliament prorogued, and our leader is stepping down.
Yeah.
And there's a whole race going on to have a new leader in place. We're kind of in a situation that, you know, like I said, with these tariffs and stuff like that, that we need to have a leader in place, and it's kind of scary that.
Well, we are lucky in the fact that we do have provincial leaders that are helping with the provinces.
Yes.
So in terms of federally, like there, you know, the federal, the federal government obviously ceases operation until the prorogue is done. Yeah. However, the provincial governments are still running the provinces, so we do have that benefit.
The provincial governments through this whole ordeal have been more outspoken than the federal government.
As technically as they should be. Like, they're supposed to be, because they represent us more than the federal government does. But again, that's a whole other thing. Like, that's a political talk we shouldn't get into. But no, you're right. I think it's definitely something to be kind of shocked about, because it's something we haven't seen.
The easy sin that would have been... And at least probably easiest for Canada in terms of negotiations and everything right now is if an election had already been called.
Yeah.
Obviously not the case. And we're having to wait till the end of the prorogue here, which is March 24th. And we'll kind of see what's going to happen after that. Yeah. And the last but not least, like what I've been finding kind of fun as obviously an MCU fan, and a lot of MCU fans will feel this way. And it's quite shocking. Jonathan Majors was originally slated to be kind of the next big bad that they were supposed to fight, like to say with Josh Brolin was supposed to be with Thanos.
Yeah.
Or was with Thanos. We've got Dr. Doom, who is a very well-known character in the Marvel Universe.
Victor Von Doom,
coming into the MCU, and they are bringing back Robert Downey Jr. to play this role.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Like, not something I expected. And then when they announced it, I'm like, what do they have planned here? Because apparently there's supposed to be some sort of, from what I've read, there's supposed to be some sort of tie-in with his Victor Von Doom character and the Iron Man Tony Stark character. Like there will be another, he'll play Tony Stark one more time, and he'll play Victor Von Doom. So something's happening here that we don't know about.
Well, with the MCU, right, they've been doing the multiverse for last few years here, and obviously that can play into it, because you've had different actors play different roles in multiversal roles with the MCU right now, so it'll be interesting to see how that works together and correlates together. I trust the Russo brothers, considering what they did with the Avengers and Captain America Civil War and Winter Soldier, so I really trust what they're doing. It was surprising, that's why I'm including this in this category here. RDJ is a great actor, so I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Shocked and appalled, but in a positive way.
Yeah.
Positive. Now let's continue the discussion with the MCU, because, you know, we always discuss movies on this podcast, and this time we're going to continue that conversation with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let's start with Iron Man 3.
Yeah, so Kiss Kiss Bang Bang director Shane Black came in to direct an MCU movie, Iron Man 3. And my personal opinion is probably my least favorite of the three.
I was going to say, where do you guys kind of put it on your list? Yeah. I'd say it's probably my third best favorite, too. Yeah. I think they kind of go in order for me. The way, 1, 2, and 3 is 1, 2, and 3.
And it's in part because I feel they kind of butchered the Mandarin in terms of what the Mandarin was in the comics compared to what is in this movie. Don't get me wrong, I love Ben Kingsley. He's a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
And he does portray the Mandarin in terms of the mannerisms of the evil side great, but when he's Trevor Slattery, that's what kind of broke that down for me.
Totally.
Made it less likable for me. You know, other things that I thought were great about this film was, even prior to the film, what kind of got you really excited about this movie was actually the trailer. It was such an intense trailer, and hearing Ben Kingsley narrate in the background to it I was so excited to see this film, and it was still enjoyable. It just it didn't have the same tone or feel as the first two.
Right.
So there's something that's kind of a major plot point in this movie that I almost find becomes irrelevant, and I want to know what you guys think about it, or maybe what the point of it was. And they really dwell on the fact that Iron Man gets panic attacks.
Yeah.
Since the whole incident in New York, right? And because of that, he makes all these Iron Man suits, different colors, different styles, different weapons, different whatever, and then causing, you know, problems with Pepper. But after this movie, we don't really see that anymore. So
that's true.
Do you guys think there's a relevance there? Is it was just a plot point they needed to fill the movie? I look at it now and I think, I don't really get it.
Honestly, I don't remember the panic attacks. I don't know. I never thought about that.
I think it's just for him, it was just a stage. If you're looking at the way Tony Stark is as a character, he grows throughout his films, but he's also grown as a character when you look at some of the flashbacks and stuff too. So, you know, like having a panic attack and having, some PTSD was a stage for him. Once he kind of got control over that again, it really just, it never became an issue for him again.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to look at it.
I mean, sure. I feel like too, maybe there's a sense of confidence too when he's joining the Avengers and kind of realizing that they are a team and that they work as a team, and so that probably plays a part in it. But yeah, no, I can definitely see that being the reason behind it. Thor: Dark World. What do you think, gentlemen? I have never seen any of the Thor movies, so
really?
I cannot put myself in a position of having an opinion, but. Maybe you can enlighten me.
I would say I think I've seen this one time, and it was sort of later because I wasn't really ever a fan of the Thor movies either. I don't like the movies. I actually, sorry to say, I don't like the actor, and I don't really like the character. I almost find him to be a little irrelevant to the rest to the rest of the film series, so I didn't really pay too much attention to them. I mean, don't get me wrong. Am I bored while watching it? No, I'm not. It's a flashy, catchy movie. But I'm not going to sit there and go, and, you know, if I had to pick 20 of the Marvel 800 that they've got,
yeah.
He wouldn't be anywhere close to that list.
Fair enough.
Well, next to Captain America, this is an introduction to one of the other Infinity Stones with the Aether in the movie.
Right.
And it was a good way to kind of introduce it and to have it kind of affect Natalie Portman's character. And I really like Christopher Eccleston. So he's the guy who played the villain, the actor that played the villain in the movie. I really like him as an actor. I don't think he was well suited, actually, unfortunately, for the role. Kind of took away from it. So it was less enjoyable than the first Thor movie is. And certainly the ones that were after that, I won't go over that because we'll talk about those in the future. They were actually quite fun Thor films to watch. This one's probably the least favorite of all of them because it just didn't really have a very, very intense character for being an antagonist.
I'll tell you, like, my sort of reasoning behind not seeing any of the Thor movies is not because I don't like the character or because I don't like, you know, the movies. I've never seen any Thor movies. It just, honestly, that's pure coincidental. I just have never seen them. And I mean, I every once in a while I'm like, oh, I should watch those, but then I just never do. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just funny how that works out.
We kind of had that same emotion towards it until we decided to actually do it. Yeah. But it was that way for a long time. Like, oh, we should watch the Thors. Yeah, we should. No, it never happens. And then finally we did actually
like,
do
I'll,
it.
I'll scroll through Disney and then I'll be like, oh, this looks more interesting. And I'll watch something else instead. But
comfortability.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so Captain America, Winter Soldier.
In my opinion, is the best Captain America film.
I agree. I strongly agree. Yep. We are introduced to Black Panther in this one, are we not?
That's Civil War.
Is it? Oh, yep. Okay. I stand corrected.
So this is the first film for Anthony and Joe Russo in the MCU. Obviously, this film catapulted them into the other films that they did, which are in later phases. I can't say enough. I think Sebastian Stan as the Winter Soldier, breakout role for him. He was fantastic as
the counterpart. Yeah,
just absolutely. Eerie.
Yeah, like he played it. He played it. Yeah, eerie is probably the best word. I was going to say creepy, but eerie definitely, because you can sense that there is a sense of he's not in control of his decisions. You know, like brainwashed almost, but he plays it really well. And yeah, like throughout the whole MCU from this point on, like Sebastian Stan definitely like brings it with that character.
Absolutely.
I think that eeriness really stems from the fact that you don't get much context on his character.
True.
And then you later, obviously you do, but watching this film, it's just, there's something about him that just makes you go, what is this guy's deal?
What's his problem?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, he was in the first Avenger, and like he had a role as Steve's best friend. Not that I would say he was forgettable. I didn't pay as much attention to him.
Me
in
too.
Movie compared
yeah,
to this
same
one.
Thing. You didn't think anything about it.
Yeah.
You know what happened to Bucky? You don't think that. You don't ask those questions.
No, you don't at all. yeah, I'd say, and even the dynamic between Scarlett Johansson and Chris Evans in terms of trying to escape Hydra and the whole works in the film, I think. It's probably one of, besides maybe the Avenger films, it's one of the most intense films out of
yeah,
the whole.
Yeah, agreed.
I think it set like a record for visual effects. Something like 2,600 different visual effects. And they were done by different companies.
Oh, wow.
Just to try to keep up with
yeah, I believe that.
With production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I will say like it's a good starting point to build up what is to come with the Avengers movies. You know, thinking of like Civil War and stuff down the road. Just kind of that high intense action that they bring with the movie, you know, I definitely agree with you. It's one of their better ones for sure. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this movie. I thought it was wonderful. And, I hadn't put two and two together in terms of this being kind of a part of the whole MCU. Like I knew it was, but I just hadn't like thought to myself, this is the same universe, you know? And I didn't read the comics or anything, so that's why. But, you know, I really, really enjoyed it. As somebody kind of coming in neutral, it definitely was a fun movie to kind of go and see.
I would agree wholeheartedly with you, yeah. It feels like it could be a standalone movie and just be as good.
Yeah.
Until you realize and go along with the rest of the MCU over the years and realize how well it fits
totally,
in.
Totally, yeah.
But it could be its own, you know, series that you say as on its own.
Yeah.
Space Die Hard.
James Gunn was perfectly chosen for this, and
you mean the guy who's ruining DC?
Yeah.
Just yes, my opinion.
That's true. And honestly, like the camaraderie between the four main Guardians, right? Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, Zoe Saldana as Gamora, Dave Bautista as Drax, and or I should say, sorry, the five of them, my apologies. Vin Diesel as Groot and Bradley Cooper as
Bradley
Rocket.
Bradley Cooper, yeah.
The dynamic between all of them, it makes it a fun movie, and it makes it Star Wars, but on the comic
yeah,
book
like
side.
The sort of comedic timing is perfect in the movie for every single character. Dave Bautista's character Drax is perfectly stupid, and it's wonderful. Like it there could be like the most serious moment happening, and then he says some stupid comment and just makes everybody laugh.
And I think it's because the seriousness of his comments, he just thinks he's the brightest
bulb
that's in
right,
the match.
Yeah,
and realistically we're all looking going, did he just say that?
It flies over his head. It couldn't fly over my head.
But I'll say one thing you didn't mention about Guardians of the Galaxy is, and that is the soundtrack.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just so many epic songs in this
so
movie.
Many.
Yeah, and it's great. It's a wonderful movie.
And I like the way that ties in with how they make the movie fun.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've got other like standout actors and characters in this particular film. Lee Pace as Ronan was amazing. And he wasn't very well, like he was known, but not very well known when this movie came out. Michael Rooker as Yondu, amazing.
How do you not love Michael Rooker, right? Like, yeah, he's good in everything he does.
Karen Gillan as Nebula, she was fantastic in Doctor Who, and to see her obviously in a film like this. Awesome.
She was also in Jumanji.
That's right.
Loved her in Jumanji.
Just prior to this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, obviously a great movie. Avengers: Age of Ultron. And this is kind of where Avengers goes down a specific path where I'm just kind of like, what, like, you almost go like, at this point you're kind of like, where are they going to come up with more bad guys? Like at this point you're just like, okay, so now it's just a virtual bad guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like it feels like all of a sudden Jarvis is, you know, the without giving too much away, but like all of a sudden AI is taking over the world, and that's kind of the future we live in right now in reality.
It's true.
But we're watching it in kind of movie form. Let's talk a little bit about this movie. What do you guys think in terms of the Avengers series of movies? Where does this one kind of stack up?
In my opinion, it's probably on my bottom. I still think it's a good film, but out of all the Avenger films that have been out so far, it's probably my least on them.
What's tough about agreeing with you on that, Paul, is that I think they're all just so good generally.
Yes.
That even the one that isn't so great is still pretty fantastic.
I think that's what Paul meant to say too. Like, I'm with you on that too. It's definitely my least favorite of the Avenger movies, but it's definitely a good movie still. Like, it still, you know, has, it holds its own based on the fact that it's an entertaining movie.
And in terms of digital characters, if you're probably looking at, I think, the best casted voice, I think James Spader as Ultron was perfect.
And you know what? Spader, the funny thing about Spader is he can play sinister so easily.
Yeah.
Just talking naturally. But he's also, like, really brilliant, you know, in the way he portrays characters. Did you ever see, you saw Spader in The Office?
Yes.
My God. Did you see it? You never watched The Office? Oh,
no.
Dude.
No, I didn't.
He was such an awesome character in that show. So just like the way he makes you, the audience, feel uncomfortable, you know, when he talks to people and stuff. It's just so good. Okay, so that brings us to our last movie, Ant-Man.
Love Paul Rudd. I love this is, again, I think could be one of those separated from the MCU. Because it came maybe a little bit later in the series, it could appear that way.
Yeah.
Kind of not integrated right from the beginning, but again, just kind of fits in so well.
Yeah, I think in terms of antagonists, this movie actually had probably, in my opinion, the weakest antagonist out of almost all the MCU films to this point. You know, it had really good support characters. Michael Douglas as Hank Pym was, in my opinion, perfect casting.
Incredible,
He was really good. Evangeline Lilly as his daughter, also really, really good.
Local talent,
absolutely.
Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah, that's
absolutely. But Corey Stahl, I know that he's had some notable TV roles, but I felt for this film he didn't bring it, even though Paul Rudd did bring it for the film.
I would argue there was probably purpose behind that choice in terms of having a weaker antagonist, and I think it's because the character is basically new to being a superhero. So, you know, when you think about it, like, he's got to take on somebody who's not going to challenge him too much because he's still new to his powers, right? And so ultimately, yeah, you're going to get a weaker antagonist, but it does build up later on.
It does. And, you know, it did have some really good comedy chops, even just besides Paul Rudd. Michael Pena's character in the film was absolutely perfect for his role.
It's fun. It's a, you know, and I mean, that's one benefit with the MCU is that they don't just have nonstop action and nonstop seriousness and whatnot. They do add a lot of comedy to what they bring. So it's nice to kind of get that separation with their movies. And Ant-Man is probably a good example of that. Having Paul Rudd as your star, you're going to get that no matter what.
Well, and he was in his mid to late 40s, and, like, obviously, you know, not that I'm looking at men without shirts on, but he was absolutely ripped in the film. He
worked hard for it.
He worked hard for it, absolutely.
I mean, as a guy who's in his almost mid 40s, you do have to work hard for stuff like that. I wouldn't know because I'm not in that shape, but, you know, I'm sure you do have to work hard for it.
I'm a shape.
I'm definitely a shape. It happens to be round, but. I mean, hey, guys, there's so many more MCU movies we can talk about, but that's for a future episode, I would think. I'm pretty happy with what we got today, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's been great.
If you guys have anything you guys want us to talk about, make sure you reach out to us on our social media. We're available at The Puck and Pod on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And of course, you can hear us, or see us, I guess, technically on YouTube, but you can hear us on any podcast availability locations such as iHeartRadio, Spotify, Seeker, any place like that. So make sure you reach out to us and leave a comment. Let us know how you guys like the show. And once again, for The Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.